Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of the Mundane Festival Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lamberth. Today is Saturday, August 29th, 2020. Thank you for listening. You can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Podbean, the host site, Google Podcasts, or even Spotify, or countless other applications that you can use to listen to this show. If you like it, please rate and review it. Give it 5 stars. Let everybody know why you like the show, because it makes me feel good about myself and the decision to start this thing a little over 7.5 years ago. So that would mean a lot to me. It makes me feel good. So please do that if you're into this thing. This is episode 447, and I have a super special return guest. You know him, you love him. He's a comedian, he's a podcaster, Paul Verzi. From the Verzi Effect podcast show. You can check his special out on Comedy Central. And he's got a new podcast, a new show called Dude, I Called It, which is cool. And I'm going to share that conversation that I had with him with you in a few moments. Right now, I'm sitting on my couch recording this intro early on a Saturday morning. Found out late last night about the news of Chadwick Boseman passing away at the young age of 43, passed away from complications due to colon cancer. It's a real, it was shocking to hear. Really talented guy, and most importantly, seemed like a really sweet dude, just a really kind soul. I did not know him, but I can give you a Chadwick Boseman story. Maybe a year or two ago. So a year or two ago, I was at an audition that I didn't book, and I was a big time casting director, and I've never booked anything that I've gone into her office before. But I mean, she did call me back several times to audition. So I'm in there, and then they're like waiting to see people, and as I'm the only one in the office, the only actor in the office, and they get I was sitting beside this really big ass plant, and then I just heard them talking. It's like, oh, Chadwick Boseman sent that to us, and I was like, oh, that's a nice Chadwick Boseman story. He seemed like a nice, gracious, sweet dude. And just from the outpouring of everybody on social media, the celebrities and, you know, other actors that he worked with had really kind things to say about him. I want to say 2005, when I graduated from grad school, I was living in Chicago, obviously, and there was a theater company, a black theater company called Congo Square Theater Company, and they were the premier black theater company in Chicago. And Chadwick Boseman had a play called Deep Azure, which was essentially about police brutality. And that's 15 years ago. Police brutality has been going on forever. Since its inception, this shit is nothing new that's going on right now. And it's a really good play, and it was written in verse and it was written in rhyme. I auditioned for it, didn't get it. I saw the play, and it was very good. That's my only connection to Chadwick. And I would just say, like, the obviously him playing Jackie Robinson, but I think his iconic role was Black Panther, and that movie means so much to a lot of people, black people specifically, because I said it every time I've talked about it on the show and talked about it with other people. That was essentially Black Star Wars, regardless of how you think about whether the movie was as good as such and such, as good as a superhero, where it ranks in the pantheon of comic book movies, it holds a special place in a lot of black people's hearts. And it meant a lot, because it just made me think about, you know, almost at the time it came out, almost being 40, pushing 40 at the time. Don't really remember too many black heroes, black action figures. Like when I had David Vonner on, which is a good episode to listen to if you haven't. When I had him on, we were talking about that. And we talked about like Sun Man. It's like would be like an action figure what's the Hotep guy. It seemed like an action figure that dude would I'm sorry. Anyway, but I don't remember that, and I remember just being so excited trying to hunt down the Black Panther action figure when it came out for Captain America Civil War. That was the first time we saw him, and it was so dope. And he was Black Panther. And and to know that he was battling colon cancer while doing all these roles and stuff, it's pretty amazing. And he's definitely going to live on forever through his work. And I think if you have to go like that, the silver lining in it all is, as an artist, I'm sure he's satisfied with the work that he did, you know, especially being able to do that, a role like Black Panther, and for it to mean so much to people, and not just black people, but to mean so much to everybody. But I know specifically being a black person, a POC, that it meant a lot, and it is opening doors for us to see more diverse superheroes in TV and film. And I think he's with the producers of that film and everything, he's a part of that. He's a huge part of that. And it's also marketable and profitable to see those images on screen. So it's not I have certain things that I want to say about it, but I just don't think it's the right time for it yet. And I don't think, maybe I probably shouldn't say, but just about how the internet is, the internet is often a beautiful place to connect and find people. And it's helped me a lot. And it's actually helping me through this pandemic with the people that I can connect with and interact with that make me feel good, get those positive endorphins from talking to people making connections, and hopefully entertaining you or making you or being in somehow informative, all this stuff, very positive things that the internet brings. But it's also a very toxic place. And I find myself wanting to just get away from it. Just RIP to that man, Chadwick Boseman, really talented dude. Seemed like a sweet guy. Not that much. I mean, there's a lot going on that went on this week with the aftermath of the Jacob Blake shooting, and the protesting in Kenosha, the murder of two people from that kid. You know, I saw some shit where somebody in comedy, a comedy manager, said we should feel sorry for the kid and the society that he came up in to make him think that he was helping. That's one way to look at it, but it's like, man, have you made money off of black people? And I've seen him, you know, he's made money off of black people of color, black people. For him to say that, it's just like, dude, I don't know that you need to go on Facebook to say that. Okay, all right, look, it's fucked up what happened. It's fucked up. And so, yeah, that's really all that I want to say. I want to bring you to my conversation with Paul. Paul, when he and I decided, because I'd done his show, The Verzi Effect, about a month or two ago. And we had a great time, and I said, "Oh, you got to come on mine, and we can just like shoot the shit." And we did start out doing that. Then we got into stuff that was going on. This was recorded on Wednesday of this week. So this was like Wednesday, the 26th. And this was right around the time that the players, that Milwaukee started the boycott of the NBA season. So we were going to get into that, but then we just got into some other stuff. And we didn't know all the details yet about the kid in Kenosha, Rittenhouse. And we didn't know too much about it, but I do mention that. I was trying to think, and then I think I pronounced inalienable rights wrong. I said it wrong, so I was kind of passionate when I was saying it, so I got stuff wrong. I'm not perfect. So Paul and I, we had a good conversation. I'll let that conversation be whatever it is for you. It seems, it always seems like when I have a white person on, a white comic, just one of my colleagues, one of my friends, it gets kind of racial. I'm just a guy doing a podcast, but I'm also aware of the very small platform that I have, who I'm talking to, what I'm about as a person. And I hope you see that's what this show is. I'm talking to real people about real things. And I hope you enjoy my conversation with the great Paul Verzi. You had this Instagram shot of what was that? That had to be like last month. Was that the 4th of July?
Yeah, probably 4th of July. We had the refrigerator stocked and we had a bunch of blue moons in there.
How'd you get the pumpkin that early?
I don't know. My wife, you know, there's a beer distributor. So we went to one of those places that it's not like going to a store or like not even like a liquor store or a supermarket. We went to like a beer where you get kegs.
Got you.
And they probably had all the blue moons out there, but we stocked it with everything. We had Coronas, blue moons, we had Coors Light, we had, you know, Bud Light, and then people like those IPAs and those ciders. So we just tried to, you know, hard seltzers. We just tried to get like something for everybody.
Sure. No, you always do. It's always a good time at the Verzi compound, especially.
Yeah.
I try not to. I think ever since I moved back east and having to drive everywhere, I've just been very cautious of how much I drink. I don't really drink that much anyway, but I'm kind of, even though I'm a big guy, I'm kind of a lightweight because I could be getting takeout at a bar and at Hooters or something, and I have like a tall blue moon, and I'll be like kind of nice driving home, driving the 5-minute ride home. I'm a little nice, so
sorry. Yeah, I mean. It's tough, man, when you go out at that time. Me and you went to the movies, or do we go to the movies and then Buffalo Wild? Yeah, we went to the movies, and then after the movies, we went to Buffalo Wild. We went to that movie theater by you.
Oh, yeah, we tried to go. No, we went to Hooters because we tried to go to New Jersey Ale House. Well, I think that's the night that we saw Prisoners, which
Yeah, and that's the night that we went, and there was like UFC on.
Yeah,
and we're eating, but like it's tough when you do that with a buddy.
Yeah,
and you get like a cold beer or like a cocktail, and the first one goes down because like we were laughing the other day, man. Because I'm the type of dude where I know when my first sip of my first drink is good, I'm having a second. I actually said the other day I took a sip of red wine.
Yeah.
And as soon as I sipped it, I go, I'm definitely having a second glass of this. So, we got to be careful. But, those were the days.
Yeah, yeah, when we could hang out and shit.
Yeah,
dude, like, so there's a lot of shit went down, like, right in between us agreeing to do this. And we'll talk about the NBA and everything that's going on. But we got to shoot the shit. How do you feel? Were you aware of this? You're the first person I can talk about this with. Did you see the Tom Cruise video that was going around yesterday?
Tom Cruise? No, I did not.
So Tom Cruise, he's out in Paris, and he's filming the Mission Impossible 25, and he had a mask on, and he was going around. It was just a 30-second video of him going to see Tenet, and he's like, oh, how do these people know who I am, even though I have a mask on, blah, blah, blah. And he goes to watch, he sits down and watches a movie in a relatively crowded theater. And then the movie goes off and he gets up and like makes a beeline for the exit. And they said, how was the movie? How'd you like the movie, Tom? He's like, it was great. I loved it. And I feel like he went to the movies to show everybody it was okay to go back, so everybody could go see Top Gun Part 2 when that shit comes out, whenever it comes out.
Oh, you know something? I have to.
I lost you for a second.
What's that?
I kind of lost you for a couple seconds.
Oh, I see what you're saying. I don't see the whole video here.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that that's a really good theory, and I think that Top Gun 2, you know, they're delaying it, but they want it to come out.
Yeah.
And I'll be honest with you, I'm all over that shit.
Of course.
Top Gun was, I'm gonna be playing volleyball shirtless after that movie. You know, in some jeans. I don't understand how going into certain stores that they say that are essential, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Aren't essential. And let's be honest, I understand liquor stores may be essential to people, but like liquor stores are packed.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
People, and, you know, getting wine and stuff. Now, listen, I'm not saying some supermarkets can't sell beer and stuff like that, but I think going to the movies and entertainment, especially, suicide rate right now is way up. People's depression and loneliness is way up. People living unhealthy, eating unhealthy, all that stuff is way up. And I think that that has a lot to do with not being able to go out. Now, I think obviously some states that have like rising cases of it, but if a restaurant in New York or Connecticut or a bunch of these restaurants are doing like, you know, 6 feet apart, if a movie theater, you know, the way the IMAX has an assigned seat, right?
Yeah.
I don't know why, if you have an IMAX theater that seats 300 people, you can't have everybody, you know, every six seats have somebody and try to get, you know, obviously things will sell out a lot quicker, but that way the movie theater stays afloat. People get the experience to go. It's probably going to be cleaner, Chris, because they're going to wipe the place down and everything is going to be like disinfected. And so it's not going to be like as gross where they're just picking up popcorn and candy and shit, letting the next group of animals in. They're going to probably wipe stuff down and do that. I've been to places where, you know, when we were on vacation and at the Jersey Shore, we went to an amusement park and they had glass up at like near the arcade and they wiped things down and they're, you know, and people had masks and people were safe and all that stuff. So maybe you're right. Maybe Tom Cruise is doing this to be like, hey, let's get back in the theater somehow.
Yeah, I don't know, because he's the biggest movie star. I think he's the greatest movie star of all time. I don't care what anybody says. Like, there's numbers to back that. And as far as him being like, I think he's the GOAT. I mean, there's a lot of people that I think that I like over him a little bit, couple people. But just he's one of the best that we've ever had, if not the best.
I really can't argue that as far as like box office numbers, you could say he's Jordan.
Yeah.
You know, he was in such amazing blockbuster. I mean, that guy's been in blockbuster hit after blockbuster hit after blockbuster hit, that movies that people still talk about.
Right.
You know, I think that a guy like that, who people talk about, somebody said to me the other day, Vanilla Sky was good. I never even saw that.
It was good. It's just, it's kind of weird, but I own it on Blu-ray. I think I got it from not Blu-ray, but DVD. Like, I got it like previously viewed from Blockbuster. It's a good movie.
Listen, if there's a Mount Rushmore of box office legendary movie stars, he's on it.
Yeah. Yeah. And he does all his stunts. You know, he's the GOAT. Yeah, that just dawned on me when I saw that yesterday. I was like, he's good. And I looked at it again. I looked at it a couple times, and I was just like, that's got to be like a PR stunt. It's got to be like, I'm just trying to look beneath the surface of that. Even though Tenet is a Warner Brothers pick, Top Gun, I believe, is a Paramount flick. The nerds will correct me if I'm wrong, but you know, and I'm not going to look it up, Paul. I'm not going to fucking look it up. I think that's what it is.
Well, I think you're right. I mean, Tom Cruise can definitely get a screener from Warner Brothers,
right,
in his palace that he probably has the movie theater in his home. And with the same amount of sound and everything like that, he's probably got employees working who can work it. So
yeah.
I think that him being out, unless he's going nuts and he's like, I need to go out, but I doubt it. I know something tells me Tom Cruise is not really a guy that's, you know, going stir crazy in a fucking one bedroom.
No, he's not. He's not doing that. Yeah, I just feel I'm starting to get bummed out now. Like, I start to get bummed out about the movies over the weekend. When I saw this kid from Australia, these two kids from Australia, like this one girl that was, she was about to spoil Tenet. Then another kid did a review, non-spoiler review. And I was like, man, like, it's like they kind of, those guys kind of behaved and they got the shit under control to a certain degree. And they're able to do all this stuff and we can't. And I was just like, man. And even though, like, because the day before, I was saying to myself, oh, the movie's, it's not even that good, you know? I was trying to be like, oh, because yeah, the reviews came out on last Friday. And I was like, oh, it's not even that good, man. I'm not killing myself for a 80% Rotten Tomato meter rating. I'm not gonna put my life in danger for that shit. And I wouldn't, and even though it's coming out next week, I would want to find that out for myself. You know what I mean? Like, if I think, like, if we would have done what we were supposed to do and not politicize the wearing of the mask, we might be in a better position. But I didn't feel it until last week, and I was starting to be. And I had a back and forth with a buddy, my buddy Michael Felder, who's a college football analyst who loves movies just as much as we do. And it was just like, ah, fuck, I'm really, like, I miss paying $20 for some nachos. You know what I mean?
I swear to God, I'm not making this up. I'm not making this up because I'm on the show with you. I remember, I think I was thinking about you and the movies because I started to miss movies.
Yeah.
And I started to, and this happened to me on our way back. And I said to Stacy, I was literally in the car with my wife and kids. And I go, I got to be honest, man. I go, I just miss the theater.
Yeah.
I go, if we could just go into the theater, man, and the sound and the screen and the, you know, the popcorn and the Twizzlers and the whole experience, the smell of it, the
yeah,
whole deal, you know, and like, you're like me and Christian, my brother,
right,
who we grew up going to that. And like, for me, going to a movie once every couple of weeks or at least once a month is something that like I really took pleasure in doing. And that's a big, like, and has nothing to do with people, you know, and people are dicks. People, what do you, you know, you got smart TVs now, you got it at home. You
yeah,
you watch what you want. And it's like, no, man, it's like, it's the same thing as like sports.
Right.
You know, I'm sure. Yes. It's great that we're watching. It's great that we get to watch some baseball and some basketball. And then who knows what's going to happen with the NFL season and people in the stands, because they're allowing the coaches to give that, I mean, the owners to say, hey, we could play in front of a certain amount of fans. But like, you know, it's not the same. And but movies is a nostalgic thing. It's something that people have been doing, you know, forever in our country. And
yeah,
it, for that 2 hours, you're in that thing, and with technology and the surround sound and the IMAX theater and stuff, I miss it too, man. I'm with you. And I was telling Stacy about that. And me and you kind of bonded our friendship from comedy club to
yeah,
after comedy shows. You know, you, me, and Christian, I remember we saw 21 Jump Street, but me and you saw Prisoners. Me and you've seen a couple of movies together. And
yeah,
it's just like part of it, man. I miss it.
Yeah.
I miss it.
Yeah, it's a bummer because I love, like, I kind of try to get a rush from seeing some of these movies on demand. Like I let myself watch something on the weekend and try to, you know, it's kind of it's hit or miss with a lot of them, like especially some of the art house movies. But I mean, it's really just been like as far as the big movies that have been out this year, I would say just like The Way Back. I know we talked about that, the Ben Affleck joint, The High Note and King of Staten Island. Like those have been like the three that have just been like, and I actually bought all I own all three of those movies. And it's just like that's the only those are the only three movies of note that were supposed to like would probably would have hit a lot harder if it was in the theaters. They were just like, these are great, but man, I miss that. I miss that experience, man. I miss the experience in being in the theater.
Yeah, it's funny because I was actually talking yesterday with Pete Davidson, and yeah. I had a nice scene in King of Staten Island. And the one thing is, it's like seeing that on if it would have been in, this is how much it's a big deal to me. It's such a big deal to be in a theater and see something on the big screen that you grew up, and somebody like us who are creative people in the arts that do stuff and that want to act and do all of that stuff. The dream is to be on that screen. Yeah. So I will tell you this, when it wasn't coming on the big screen and I found out my part was cut, that was the only thing that I was like, that was the only thing that I was like, you know, because I knew the movie would make money and I want, you know, Pete and Bill and everybody associated. Judd was amazing to work with me.
Yeah.
So like all that stuff, man, was like, and I knew it would crush, you know, streaming. And I just go like, man, I would have been a little more heartbroken if it was on the big screen. And that is only, and I'm only saying that because of what we're talking about. Because
right.
There's some special about that. There's something so dope to me about like, yo, the movie's gonna start, man. Get your soda, dick. Hurry up.
Yeah.
Like finding your seat and you're off in your own world. And then there's a really special moment that people have going to the movies. And I know you nobody knows more than you about this because I saw your keychain. And I saw how much I've never seen for the people listening. This kid's got every stubs and this and that. And what I really like, though, Chris, is at the end of the movie, when the credits are done or like when the last scene happens and the credits starts, you know, everybody starts getting up. The best is when you walk out. Right. And you just kind of like look at that person you went with. And you're like, so what'd you think?
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
That conversation happens where you're like, I remember me and Christian went to Star Wars, The Force Awakens, the first one back.
Right.
Right. Like the one where you're into Star Wars or not?
Yeah. I watch them.
Yeah. So like when Kylo Ren killed Han Solo, killed his dad. Right. You walk out and we just heard people like muttering, like, you know, especially the nerds lost their shit. And nerds go, that's Nerds went to the diner after that shit, you know.
Yeah.
You gotta eat and you gotta talk. But I miss all of that, man. I'm hoping though. I am optimistic that the numbers of COVID that are going down. We know the enemy now. I was playing golf with this doctor not long ago, and he said there's definitely going to be a second wave, but we know the enemy. You know, we got blindsided with that thing. It's like a quarterback not seeing that thing coming from, not seeing a linebacker from behind, and you just get smoked. And now, you know, even now with the cases, there's treatments and therapies even right now that the deaths are not, you know, what it, well, I mean, at one point we were losing like 2,000 Americans a day, dude.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like now, yes, it's out there. It exists and all that stuff. And it exists in some states that were really not responsible. But it's nice to see Connecticut, almost none. It's nice to see New York and New Jersey and the East Coast that got hit so hard at the beginning doing better. Restaurants are slowly starting to open at like half capacity and stuff. So hopefully movie theaters and entertainment will be sooner than later.
I'm still trying. I don't know when I'll go back. I mean, I don't, like, I know at least I think there was a theater that's like close to what town? What do they call that town? And it's in Pennsylvania. That's like a nice getaway. What the fuck is that town? And then
Poconos?
Not the Poconos, but Poconos is like, that is one of them, but there's one that's like 90 minutes south. It's like closer to Philly. Oh my God. And they have those, the show, the JJ Comedy. Oh my God. What's that room? It's that theater, that theater's that's like near, it's not far from
James Di Benedetto's room.
Yeah. James's room down there. And it's like a nice little theater. I forget that town. It'll come to me. I don't know.
Yeah. Reading? Not Reading, is it?
No, it's not Reading. Reading's like 2.5 hours. I did a one nighter there, in January. That was like like 2.5, like 2 hours and change. But anyway, but you know, like there's a theater down there that I've actually been to, and they're open. Like I see where they got the. I looked at my Stubbs app and my AMC app, and they were just I can't do it. I don't know, man. It's nothing that's gonna really bring me out. And I know people. Are you gonna be a good father and get your daughter the live action Mulan if she wants it on Disney Plus?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think so. Just because, you know, my wife, Stacy, who you know very well, Stacy is just grew up a huge, huge Disney movie fan. So we have Disney Plus. We've been watching the Star Wars that came out. We've been, you know, I'm sure when Mulan comes out, they're going to watch it. They watch all the stuff. You know, yeah, I get it. It's scary. It's also, you know, me and my wife and my kids had COVID, you know, so for us to have had it. And then I think yesterday the first confirmed case in the world of the second time happened. And the person that had it the second time was like asymptomatic. To be honest with you, Chris, if you want, and this is, again, I'm not saying this to be interesting on your podcast, because you know that my family confirmed we had it.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be 100%. If you put a gun to my head right now, I am very, very convinced that I had it twice. And the second time was super, super mild because my body knew what it was facing. And the reason I say that is because I flew to Arizona in June, and it was like right when Arizona was spiking. And my manager and agent, they were really good about it, man. My agency called up hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
My manager called up. They talked to the club owners. I was protected. The hotel was new and clean. I stayed in the hotel a lot, but people were getting cases, and I saw how their state reacted. And this is no disrespect to Arizona, because Arizona truly is one of my favorite places to perform and hang, and I love it out there. The scenery, the people, the comedy scene is underrated as far as all the clubs and rooms you could get up in, but they just weren't taking it seriously. And I was joking with them on stage. I was like, you people don't give a fuck, and they started clapping and shit.
Wow.
Like, It was like they were just like, yeah. And then all of a sudden I left and people were texting me, are you all right, man? Glad you got out of there. The airplane was packed. And I remember feeling about 2 weeks before my 4th of July party, I said to Stacey, I go, that kind of feeling I had from like my chest up, it's very vague. It's very, very vague, like almost non-existent. But the last time I felt that feeling, I had it and I couldn't smell or taste. So I think that I definitely had a brush with it again. I can't prove that. I don't know if it's true, but I think the good news is, if you are getting it a second time and you're asymptomatic with it, because there hasn't been one person in the world right now, knock on wood, that got it, and then the second time they got it, they're like in ICU or anything like that. So, but I totally get it, man. I mean, I totally get you wanting to make sure, and people that want to stay in until there's a vaccine or that they have a better hold of it.
Yeah. I mean, right now I'm going to work every other day or every so often. And after Labor Day, we're going to go back. And it's like I'm getting to the point. So if we go back, we're going to go back every day, 5 days a week and whatnot. If the theater opens and I'm back and I get back to Broadway, I'm fucking going back, because I'm already risking my life going to like work. So,
well, do you have pre-existing conditions or no?
No, I don't. I don't have anything, but I'm just apprehensive about it. Now, were you more? Did you feel more how do you say, but I guess more less fearful going out because you already had it, and after the virus had passed, did you feel more confident to go out? Is that why you like did the gigs?
Yes.
Okay.
That's a great question, and that's exactly the answer. It's that I called my manager and my agent after we went through what we went through. And what we went through was scary, man, because we were in it. I always joked on the other podcasts I've been on. I joked. I said, we got that shit like we were waiting for an album to drop. We got it right when it happened. we were online for that shit. And, I said, I was like, I'm ready to go, man. I fought it. My body fought it. I kind of had like a sample platter of the symptoms. My family less than me. The weirdest symptom was like not being able to smell or taste, even when you don't have congestion and you're breathing clearly through your nose, and then not being able to smell stuff that's potent. Like I was trying to smell whiskeys. I was trying to smell all these things that are potent, that would make your nose go, wow, I got to back up, and nothing. So, but when that went away and all the other things went away, the feelings of stuff, when all that went away, I said, I'm ready to go, man. If people are being safe, I'll wear a mask. I'm ready to go. And that's what really dictated that decision. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I do feel better now. I feel safe. If I go out now, look, I wash my hands. We have the hand sanitizer. We wear the masks. We stay 6 feet apart from people. And none of us seem to have, since I've been back and everything like that. And even those couple of days, I felt weird again after Arizona, which I don't know if it's true, but I feel if I didn't have it, I would be worried.
Yeah. So what is it? What was that like? Was it, how long was the period of you and your family having it? Like, was it a week? Was it 2 weeks? Was it a couple days?
So when this first happened, like I'm talking the first week of lockdown. So you're talking about like March 17th, 18th.
Mm-hmm.
Around a week after that, March 22nd, something around March 21st, 22nd, I just went and I laid in my daughter's room. I told Stacey I had the aches, like the chills. And in my mind, I'm like, I don't got this shit,
Mm-hmm.
And then like a day or two went by, it went away. And then just a little sluggish, and then like a cough at night that I felt like I had to get something up, but I couldn't. And it would be like a coughing fit. Now I'm listening. I remember listening to this British dude give his symptoms, and he was saying the same shit that I was feeling. And I'm going, come on, man. And then, Paul, you're a hypochondriac. You don't, there's no way. What are you out of your mind? Like all kinds of shit like that. And Stacy's like, no, there's no way. And then, sure enough, I looked on Twitter, and this is a true story, Chris. This is before the symptom was out there in the world. I looked on Twitter, and Rudy Gobert, the center of the Utah Jazz, had just gotten it. He was the first NBA player to get it.
Right.
And he tweeted something like to his fans and, hey, guys, just want to let everybody know I'm doing okay. However, I have not been able to smell or taste anything for 4 days. Has anybody experienced this? Now, me being the lunatic hypochondriac that I am, I went downstairs to the laundry room and I started grabbing Febreze sprays.
Mm-hmm.
I started spraying Febreze in my bathroom and I don't smell it. And I'm like, come on, Paul, this is crazy. And I was going to bed every night scared that I was going to wake up and need a ventilator. I'm not joking, man. And they start talking about these hospitals are out of ventilators and this. And I start thinking, like, is there going to be a bed for me? Because I knew something was wrong. But, like, imagine 2 weeks in and everybody's dying except, like, kids and you don't know. And then you find out 35-year-old jogger who's healthy is, like, deathbed. And, the poor kid from Broadway, rest his soul, died 40 old, he's fought for 95 days, lost his leg. So I'm thinking, am I gonna wake up in the middle of the night and these coughing fits not gonna go away? So that was really scary. And then after I saw the Rudy Gobert tweet, I sprayed Febreze in my face, I don't smell it, and I wake my wife up at 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm like, Stace, you gotta get out of here. She's pissed. She's like, what? And I'm like, I can't smell shit. And she was like, what? And I go, she was just trying to wake up going, what the fuck is he telling? She's like, I don't give a shit what you could smell.
I could picture her.
She was like, what? Because it wasn't even a symptom yet.
Yeah.
So I'm just, imagine being woken up at 3 o'clock in the morning by your hypochondriac OCD husband.
Mm-hmm.
And yo, I can't smell or taste anything. And so sure enough, the next day it started to kind of become like stories where people in South Korea were talking about, yes, that this is happening. And then 30% of people in the UK couldn't smell or taste. So Rudy Gobert's tweet actually started it, and I couldn't smell or taste anything for 9 days, 9.5 days. And then 5 days later, Stacy lost her smell and taste. So it just, we had it, and now we do feel better. You know, our doctor said they don't know what that means for immunity. Could mean a month, could mean a year, like the flu where everybody gets a shot. So we're still careful, but it definitely eases it for sure.
And the kids, did they have symptoms too, or?
Yeah, Lucas was like sluggish for a day or two, just kind of laying down. He just didn't feel good, but then it went away. None of us, thank God, had that bad fever. One day, Stacey and I had like 99 something, almost 100. Lucas had like a high 99, but never quite 100. So our fevers were pretty much low fever. Sophia, like nothing. She was like tired, like for a nap for one day, and then nothing. So we feel blessed. I would say out of all four of us, I definitely had it the worst. I did have a little bit of a cough. I think some of that might have had to do with just, you know, being, you know, at the time, I mean, I lost weight since then, and I'm getting in a lot of shape now with the track and the workouts and stuff. But like, I was probably 25, 30 pounds. I would say maybe like 25 pounds over where I should be. So I think that contributed a little bit. I'm sure the cigar smoking and, you know, having a couple of drinks here and there, definitely. So maybe that's why I did have the cough a little more, but I can't complain.
Yeah. Well, that's great. I'm glad that you got out of it. I mean, yeah, it's one of the, because Jeff Cerulli, another comic, had it. Him and his girlfriend had it. So it's just like, what's that?
What'd you say? What's the name?
My buddy Jeff Cerulli. He's a New York comic, and him and his girlfriend had it, and I think another buddy had it, and it's just been like, when I found out you had it, I was like, oh fuck, and then like people that I know, like not like, oh, it's this comic that I kind of know. It was just like, it was like, no, this is motherfucker that I know, I hang out with, like
yeah, like, you know, my family and stuff. Yo, people were really good about it, man. Like, you know, Andrew Scholes reached out and we talked about it on his thing. And, you know, I will definitely say I had it so early. I was the first comic that came like that, actually like had it, and radio wanted, you know, Jim and Sam, everybody that knew me and liked me wanted to talk about it and stuff. I was a little nervous about that, like being like, I was like, yeah, I got this shit. And people were like, no. I remember, you know, Bill Burr was like, Verz, you don't got that shit. You know, and he was like,
come on, Paul.
He was like, come on. He's like, he was joking. I was like, man, I can't smell or taste. He's like, yeah, well, I smell bullshit. You know, Bill joking.
Yeah.
But, and then, no, man. And then all of a sudden you started hearing more and more people having it. And the good thing about COVID, if there is one, is the blessing is that children, and my doctor even said so too. My doctor didn't know that much. See, the thing is, Chris, this was so new. Reputable doctors in Westchester had to go to the hospital to study it. Like my doctor, I was telling my doctor information. They didn't know. But the one thing that was amazing was that they said children get through it and handle it very well and do very well with it. So that was like, oh man, thank God. Like if anything, and like, I think 93 or maybe higher than that, 93% or more people in Italy were 79 years or older. So they did. Like when we started to hear, it looks like older. There are exceptions, but it looks like older. It looks like people who have had cancer and chemo. It looks like people who have diabetes. It looks like people who have these diseases.
Right.
It looked like that, and they're learning. But I do think the second time around they'll be more prepared. It's going to probably maybe come back when the weather gets colder, but I think that they'll be ready.
Yeah, I just feel like I think people are trying to get in all the outside shit before it gets cold, and then maybe people, but then they're always talking about these indoor parties that people are having, I think there was like a bit of a spike here in Bergen County where people were having these like insane parties and shit. But I don't know, man, like I think it's hopefully tapering off. And every time I'm out, I do see people wearing masks. Like I go I do my laundry. They're wearing them. I go to the grocery store and stuff. People are wearing masks at work. People are wearing them. You know, so I'm hoping that things turn, you know, there's a change for the better in that regard. And it seems like every time that you and I do a pod, there's always some crazy shit going on. It's like in Kenosha, Wisconsin. This guy got shot, and Jacob Blake got shot in the back 7 times and made it. He's paralyzed, but he lived. Then there's people protesting. And then this real insidious thing about the protesting, which is just like another fucking layer to it, is where there's people that I guess they go in as these sleeper cells claiming to be protesters, but like peaceful protesters. And then they will like burn buildings and do all this shit. And now we don't have the playoffs anymore. Paul, I thought when the NBA came back, I thought racism was over. I thought it was over, and then a guy gets shot, and now there's no NBA anymore.
Yeah, man. I found that out. It was funny. I was doing a radio show in Pittsburgh today, and mm-hmm. they were like, "What do you think of the NBA?" And I'm like, "What are you talking about?" I was about to be like, "Man, that shit sucks without fans." That's what I think. This shit sucks without fans. I want to see some freaking digital fan looking around fake. And then they were like, no, you know, there's a boycott. And, you know, that's, you know, you said something before that I think is 100% true when you said, like, they politicized COVID. And that's, you know, so when you politicize something, that means you're drawing a line in the sand and you're going, well, if you don't wear a mask, you're on the right. If you wear a mask, you're on the left, which isn't true, because my father is a conservative guy down in Florida right now. And he was like, I'm wearing a mask. You know, so it's like there's a lot of people. I know of people on the other side that were like, oh, you should be able to do. So the fact that it got like that is brutal. And as far as this, what you said, like these sleeper cells, it's like nobody's helping anybody, man. And like, I really liked what Jacob Blake's family said. Like they're like the people in that neighborhood, like, are like, stop, like, what are you doing? Like, I'm scared for the country and I'm worried about the country. And then you have, you know, this asshole cop that, you know, pulls his trigger 7 times. And I look at it like this. If that guy was going to his car to do something, okay, you can definitely restrain him. You can definitely, you know, you could have restrained him. There's a lot of things that you could have done. And to pull the trigger 7 times, and I don't know if you know, Chris, or if you heard, like, somebody was saying this, which is true. A gunshot's loud, and 7 of them, dude, it's unnecessary. So you have that happen. Then you have the protesters that really just want that shit to stop. And then you have the people that just want to burn shit. And yeah, like you said, man, it's just this really weird time right now where it's like the chaos going on and what's happened in the city that made me a better comic in New York City, one of the city that I think is the best place to do stand-up comedy. I don't want to drive down there, man.
No,
you know, I don't want to drive. I don't want to drive down there. And, you know, you make a wrong turn and these people are, you know, throwing shit at some of the police. And then there's a flip side too, you know, and I'm sure, you know, people too, but like, I know police officers with families that are good people just like me and you, and all they want to do is be done with their day and go to the movie theater too.
Yeah.
And the shit that's happening to them and saying it, and I get it, because some of the fucking people that they work with are doing this horrible shit, and it just feels like with so much back and forth, man, and everybody's, you know, upset and scared and what's going on in some of these cities, man, it really is like, I'll be honest, it's almost like this COVID thing was the beginning of just like a, almost like, I don't know, like, not, I don't want to say like, almost like all this shit was meant to happen to reset for the better. And you know me, Chris, I'm an optimist.
I mean, I don't think you're wrong in that, dude. Continue what you're going to say. I like where you're going, so I'm just going to let you continue what you're going to say.
I mean, what I'm saying is like, all these things were kind of like like, listen, and somebody said comedy was just rock and roll stars. It was a bubble and it had to pop, right? All this stuff. But there was something happening that I noticed in clubs, and I noticed it in New York. I noticed that there were certain things you couldn't say. There were certain things going on that was just like, and it just, there was just this weird feeling. And I know, again, man, I know this is going to sound crazy, but from the beginning with when Kobe died, rest his soul, which is one that I still just have a hard time getting over. Like, I can't get over the Kobe Bryant one. Is just really fucking me up, man, still.
Mm-hmm. And then, he's our age.
He's our age, and that's why, yes, I was talking about my buddy Jerry told me that today. He's like, that's how cool. I was like, why is this hitting me so hard? And he was like, it's the age, and we grew up with it. But, you know, on the cover where the helicopter crashed on the newspaper, they showed it. And next to it in January 26th said coronavirus vaccines being worked on. So, and then after that, man, it's just been a shitstorm. But look, racism is coming to, you know, it's coming on the forefront. Police brutality is coming on the forefront. How we treat each other, you know, I think political, left and right, and all this stuff happening with that. It's all kind of out there in front of us. And as crazy and chaotic as it is, I almost feel like it's that big fight you have in a relationship that almost has to happen. And then when it does happen, you kind of let the chips fall where they may, and hopefully things can improve, and you at least know where you're going to go from here. And maybe that's, you know, the typical Paul, you know, optimistic person. You know, people are, Paul, man, you know, pick a side. And I'm like, I just want everybody to be good, man. I have, you know, black friends, Chris, and you're one of them. who I yo, that's serious. I got black friends, and I'm talking to a dear one right now. I got friends that I talked to yesterday. I went on a boat with a buddy who's a police officer.
Yeah.
I got, you know, and you listen to everybody and you kind of understand, like, everybody, you know, you kind of understand, but what the media is doing is the media is making you, you know, a line in the sand and all that shit. So, yeah, man, but I think in a weird way, this is some sort of cleansing. It's kind of weird how, if you notice, like, the environment got better,
you know,
and a lot of things, like people being home with their families, reevaluating their relationships, and people are either getting divorced or got closer. I think people realize, man, my job is bullshit. I don't need to drive in that shit every day.
I really, man,
I almost feel like 2020 was like this reset button where, like, everything is coming to the forefront. And eventually when it's the, cause listen, cities are not going to keep burning, cause eventually it's going to, you know, something's going to have to give, you know, and I'm not going to be a pessimist going, you know, all people are going to die. COVID's coming back harder. There's going to be a second wave that kills more. You know, that's not really who I am. I look at it from a different standpoint. I think people are on edge. I think there's an election coming up, and I think a lot of stuff, but I feel for everybody. And I really do mean that when I say it. I'm not saying that shit as some podcast. If I had a really strong feeling about something, no matter on whatever side, Chris, and we've been friends long enough, I would tell you, and I'd say, hey man, I hope you're friends with me enough to understand that this is how I feel. And this is, and even if you're against it, and that's just not the case, man. I feel horrible for the communities that are being hit by this. I feel horrible for the families of the people that are dying through this. I feel horrible for business owners. I feel horrible for people getting shot 7 times unnecessarily. I feel horrible for, you know, what the country had to witness with George Floyd. I feel horrible for police officers who were called pieces of shit who should die when they're against what happened and they're dealing with threats. I feel bad, man. And the only thing that I can do, honestly, is hope for the best, hope for change for everybody, and just try to stay creative, write jokes when it's time to go, and at least maybe vent. I've been getting on stage. I did the New Brunswick. Vinnie Brand spot.
Stress Factor. Yeah. How was and that?
It was amazing. Like, he invested a ton of money in like an outdoor thing that feels inside. At one point, there was a lightning thunderstorm rain monsoon pouring. You couldn't even tell. And I was able to vent. I was talking about both sides of the spectrum and just talking. And you could tell people were kind of like, ah, this feels good to just, yeah, there were some people who were tightened up about it, didn't know what to say. But for me, it was good to just be up there and be talking. But yeah, man, I feel bad for everything that's going on in the country. And I know this sounds like some old man shit to say, because I used to hear, you know, my parents say it. But I never thought that I would see things in this country like what I'm seeing, man. It's bizarre. Like when me and you were the same age, like I remember, like, you know, sitting home and watching Alf and shit, or yeah, you know, one of these shows where it was just like, all right, we're gonna watch whatever sitcom
or a different world, Paul. I'm just naming a black show. That's all.
A Different World was
Dwayne Wayne. You don't remember? Ooh. Oh my God! You don't remember A Different World used to come on after Cosby Show?
Wait a minute, Different World, was that the one with Shirley?
Wait, what's the one with Shirley? Shirley was What's Happening.
What's Happening? Wait, A Different World.
You don't do Marissa Tomei, your wife in the movie. Shit, that was like one of her first gigs. It was Denise. You remember Denise from The Cosby Show, right?
Yes.
Denise went to Hillman College. That was a spinoff. That was a spinoff.
And who's the woman with the long dreads, braids?
Well, did Lisa Bonet have dreads? And she had dreads, yes, on The Cosby. She had dreads when she came back to The Cosby Show, I think. But like, Marissa Tomei was one of her sweet mates, or if not her roommate, if I'm not mistaken.
I watched the one with what you're talking about, Willis.
That's Different Strokes.
I watched Different Strokes. I think I was too young. Like, What's Happening? I was young. I remember, yeah, my brother watched. I was young, but I definitely remember Different Strokes. We watched what was the one?
I was just giving you shit for naming a black show.
No, with Mrs. Garrett.
That's Facts of Life. Yeah.
Yeah, Facts of Life. Me and my grandmother used to watch Mr. Belvedere and shit.
Yeah.
Golden Girls was my shit.
Golden Girls was a shit. Did that used to come on Saturday? I remember watching that on Saturday sometimes.
It might have been, but like going back towards. I remember those times where it was like when things were bad, they weren't like this. Like,
right,
when
right.
And what's going to happen? Things are bad. And now it's like, no, man, like turn on the news. Like, I never thought I'd see simultaneously. Think about what we're seeing right now. We're seeing simultaneously, you know, New York, Chicago, and these cities doing it. But what you said is, you know, there's absolutely nothing wrong with somebody that wants to protest something. But when you go in with the intent of burning and doing it and lives could be lost, it really sucks and scary.
Well, yeah, it's people like this kid, this 17-year-old kid that had no fucking business being there from like 20 miles away, comes out with an AR-15, shoots three people, murders two of them, goes back, he's in front of the police officers, they don't do anything to restrain him, they wait till to arrest him hours later after what he did, and it's fucking insane.
What city was that? Was that in Wisconsin?
That was in Kenosha. So he's from Illinois. I forget the name of the town, but the town is approximately 20 miles from Kenosha. He claimed to go over there to protect a building that had got burned the night before. And then he apparently shot three people, two of them died. And they let him get away, and then they picked him up in his hometown.
But you said something right there, which is the problem. And what you said was police didn't do anything right there. And that's, you know, to wait that long with, you know, people that are psychopaths like that.
Yeah.
You know, those people don't have a cause. that's not a protester, or that's not somebody that's like, that's a psychopath who was waiting. First of all, you know, if you're sitting there, oh, I'm going with an AR-15 to guard a thing, and then you just open fire, and then the cops come to you later. And that's what really sucks, man. And it was going back to the mask thing. They're politicizing everything, and it's actually costing lives, because nobody, and you know, the one common thing with this, Chris, is nobody. I don't care if you're white, black, whatever. Nobody wants to see this. Nobody wants to see to be afraid to go out to the store and get something because they're afraid that a brick is going to come or fire. And me and you are two lucky ones to not be in the city.
Yeah, I mean I went to the city. God, I went about a week ago to go just get some. There's a pizza place called Emmett's, and they have Chicago deep dish pizza. Now, when my album made number one, I was going to go down there, but they were protesting and all that. And I said, you know what? I saw an Instagram post that they made. I was like, I ought to go down and just support that business. You know, like that's a local business. It's a, you know, what do you call that? Small business owner, basically.
I love how you're saying that shit. You wanted that pizza too.
I didn't want the pizza. No, of course I did. Of course, you know I wanted that fucking pizza. I go there one at least once. It's so weird because I'm never really in that area. Like, so it's like you kind of. I go there once or twice a year, and I was like, "Fuck it, I'm gonna go down there." And I just went on a Sunday, and drove into the city, and I hadn't been, and I fucking miss it, dude. Like I've talked on the show before about. There's nothing like, at least coming from Jersey, coming from the location that I come from, you cross the GWB, you go down the West Side Highway, you see New Jersey on the other side, and you're in the city, and you're going down to do what you love to do, to perform and make people laugh. You know, it's fucking awesome. And it's like I've missed it. Like I just... You know, it's just one of those things. So I just said, you know what, let me just drive into the city and that was my excuse to get some pizza. But, you know, it was I missed the city. I feel like I was just starting to hit my stride at 40 years old. Like with comedy, I was turning a corner. There was a dropout at Laugh It Up Poughkeepsie and I got into headline. Like my first like room like that, you know, in the area. And it was like, did you and I do that before? I don't know if you and I did it.
One time, yeah.
We did do it. I did it with you. I did it with Lemon. I did it with Yamanika. And to open for people. And then it was my night to headline because somebody dropped out. And I did well. That was the night before Kobe died. And I felt like I was just like, oh, I'm coming into my stride. I'm working on a Broadway show. New York is becoming the place where I work. New York City. I figured out a code of some kind. You know, like within the last 3 or 4 years, I figured something out. And I'm doing like, if I died tomorrow, I did everything that I wanted to do artistically. Maybe not at the level that I want to ascend to, but I did it. Like I would, you can't, like they can't take away... They can't take away me opening for some of my favorite comics. Me, when I was a kid, when I'm a kid, we talk about watching TV when you're a kid, watching Comic View and laughing at D.L. Hughley. Yep. Then I'm fucking having, I talk about this fucking story all the time, but having Seabass with the motherfucker years later. It's incredible. It's amazing. You listen it's like the life that I've been able to live being, you know, and I know you can speak the same thing. So it's, I don't know. Like, I hope it comes back,
I was talking to somebody about you today. I was actually talking to Jerry Ferrara.
Okay.
About you today.
Turtle.
And I was talking to Jerry. Mm-hmm. Jerry's a friend. My buddy got this part in Broadway, and you know, but I was like, you know, Chris, I had a TV show we were pitching, we were ready to go with The Hour, but you know what, right now we're talking to people about The Hour and things are going to come back. And you know what, like I said, it's a setback. All we can do is hope, be optimistic, and live our lives best way that we can. And, you know, it's funny because it sounds like some corny cliche shit, but if you just treat everybody, I always said, like, if you showed up to a party that you didn't know anybody, right? And you were like, my buddy Paul's in the back. I don't know. Right. And it's a weird thing, right? Like, mm-hmm. I always say, like, my buddy Paul's in the back, but it's a big house party. So you got to walk through all this stuff. I always say, treat people the way you would want to be treated during that walk to find your friend and asking questions, and you're nervous and you're scared and there's strangers of all different things. And you're at this place and I was like, treat people like how you want to be treated during a situation like that. And if everybody lived like that, and unfortunately we're not, but I do think that this is kind of showing the country, dude. Yeah. This is not nobody wants this. Nobody wants this. Nobody wants police brutality. Nobody wants, I mean, obviously there's a handful of, you know, there's people that are pieces of shit, groups that are pieces of shit, but I'm saying, like, I'm talking about people like me and you.
Yeah.
That are just like, want to live life and go about getting back to work and treating people with respect. And nobody wants to see, you know, these people, these anarchists going in and shooting people with AR-15s. I didn't even know that story before you told me. It is sickening. But it's like, yeah, man, I just I think you're going to get the Broadway thing back. I think, you know, as far as, you know, hitting your stride at 40, dude, I right now, man, like, stand up was never better for me. Clubs all over the country wanted me. You know, I have a great team behind me. We're about to pitch a show. The new hour, everybody says is better. And
I told you that. I told you that shit December of, what was that? Was that December 2018?
No, I think it was.
When did we do Stress Factory?
I don't think it was 18, but you know, what? I got to look at it, but like having people that I really, you know, respect their opinion and you're included in that. I mean, you were the one helped do that. Told me to do that closer at the Garden, which worked, but like everybody's telling me, you know, and I have some really big people that want to be a part of it and direct it. Pete Davidson wants to be a part of it. He loved it. So, you know, I had this stuff going, but you know what? I just, you know, it's like you give somebody lemons, they make lemonade. Now,
yeah,
my online presence has totally changed. My views on my special have gone up. Built a studio at the house, building the podcast and stuff. So you just do what you can do, but you know, Chris, you're definitely going to get what you got in that stride you were going to hit. By the way, yo, we got to get together and do some fat shit. And I mean, like, F-A-T, fat. Like
I can't. Yeah, I don't want to do too much. But we do have to one day. I'm always looking at
this. There's a place, Maggie McFly's, right?
Yo, why does that sound familiar?
It's in
Connecticut?
It's in Connecticut. It's called Maggie McFly's. We went out on a lake. My buddy has like a pontoon boat. So we just went out on a lake, you know, jumping in the water, having a couple of drinks. And they were like, you want to come to dinner with us afterwards? And we went and they were like, this place is huge. The menu is insane. You know, the menu, I thought it makes a cheesecake. It was like a textbook. I was like, I don't know how all this shit is in here. And we
it's
had,
like a textbook.
You know, it was like, I almost have to show you, like, look
I'm
online.
On the website. I'm on the website. Okay.
This place, they had fried mac and cheese balls, fried mozzarella. They had egg roll trio. One was buffalo. One was Philly steak. We had all that shit as appetizers. You know, I'm telling you, this place could give 00 a run.
That's what I was about to ask you. Was it better than 00?
I'm telling you, if you come over one time, we'll drive out there. It's like 20 minutes from me. And we'll just, you know, be hungry and we'll just go off.
Yeah, one day we'll have to do that. Yeah, we'll make it happen one day. I think within the God willing, knock on my wooden TV tray. God willing, I think we'll fucking in a few months it'll. I don't fucking know.
I think I think we're not going to be in clubs for a year in New York City. You know, but I think, you know, I'm doing some outdoor shows. I'm going to Cleveland. I'm going to Atlanta and, you know, just some stuff. Unfortunately, money at these places is definitely less because the capacity's left. So it's like, what can you do?
Right.
But yeah, man, just want to get sharp again and do all that. So, you know, I'm looking forward to it. Looking forward to hanging with you. And by the way, we're COVID free at the Verzi house, so you want to come over, man? We watch fucking Mulan together.
That's very tempting. We'll see, but I don't know, man. I'm still just like crazy apprehensive about it. Like I'll just have to go.
We're getting our physicals. I'm going to the doctor late, like September 25th. I'll probably find out all that stuff. And if everything, we all come back from our physicals, COVID free, we'll have you over.
All right. It was something else I wanted to ask you. God, I forget what it was about, but I feel like we covered a lot of shit. We covered some good shit. Oh, what was the place that you took? Oh, I have to give you props, because I think I feel like you were the one that told me about this or just mentioned it somewhere and I picked up on it. There's two things. One, because I did shout you out a couple weeks ago. I went to Stu Leonard's. They opened up a Stu Leonard's in Paramus, not far from me, and they sell brisket. And I got like a pound of brisket, and I used some of it in an omelet. And oh my God, dude! Didn't you say something about that shit before?
Yo, I had brisket and eggs about 2 years ago for the first time, and it blew my dick off, man. because like I was at this barbecue place and they do brisket and wings and all that stuff, and I was like, eggs, and I was like, I don't know what I want, can I get an egg? And they were like, you want brisket on that? And I was like, on the eggs? And they were like, oh my God, yeah. So they put eggs. It was an English muffin with eggs and brisket. And dude, I was like, it's like, if you never had brisket or any kind of like, you know, prime or whatever it was on with eggs, it's just such an unbelievable game changer.
Yeah, dude. Like, I did that, and I said, let me just put some of this, and it's good. I think I want to go back there, go to Stu Leonard's and get some. I've had like tacos, and I got like taco fixings. I was thinking about like doing that, because there is to try to copy what this. There's this barbecue taco place that I talk about all the time called Carlito's, and it's in the Garden State Mall. But since COVID, they have another open up a location like in Lyndhurst near the fucking since I haven't been anywhere, I don't know names of shit anymore. What's the place where people wear they fight in armor like knights and shit?
Oh shit.
Oh my God.
Oh, I know what you mean.
People are probably yelling at this podcast right now. They're yelling.
Oh, what is this shit called with the Renaissance?
Yeah, it's Renaissance. It's fucking, oh my God.
I'm gonna find out right now. Hold on.
Lyndhurst.
What's it called?
That is so bad. We're too young. We're not old enough for this shit, dude.
I just Googled Knights Fighting Dinner. Medieval Times.
Thank you. Medieval Times.
Yeah, and it's in Lyndhurst, New Jersey.
Yeah, it's not far from there, because I used to do an open mic at this like 70s style office building, and it was just like a sad open mic, and it was in Lyndhurst. The places you go with fucking comedy, man. Like you just, I don't know. It's crazy.
Yo, you think we got it bad. Imagine being a Medieval Times fighter for a living.
People cheer them on though, without them having to do much. Like all that shit is scripted. So, but yeah, that I mean, there was. I don't know if you remember that movie Garden State, but one of the characters worked at Medieval Times. I think I had to rewatch that. But yeah, that still put it on a show. So I can imagine what that's like if you don't want to be there. Ugh.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I've never been. I think my wife went. I'll be honest. Like, I don't know how much I desire to go, but once would be cool.
I went once, and you know why we went? It was because of Cable Guy. Because they had a... Do you remember Cable? Like they had scene where they, you know, did that shit. And I was like, oh, I want to go. But then years later, me and my cousins went, and it was cool. You know, it was like, oh, you get like a little Cornish hen and a Pepsi or some shit, you know.
So let me ask you something before we get out of here, because you asked me my opinion and perspective of what's going on.
Sure.
But when you see the protesting and the rioting, and obviously you see the police brutality, and you saw this guy Blake get shot 7 times, and then you see all the stuff going on, and the anti-police and this and that, everything. What are you're seeing this, and you've racism in your life.
Oh yeah, every day, Paul.
And what do you think?
Well, I think that, you know, I think we might have talked about this when I did your show a month or two ago. I feel a little, I mean, shit, right after today, like after especially what went on today with the NBA, like I've always felt this year, I felt cautiously optimistic where I haven't been optimistic at all before. And it's just for the most part, it's always been this there, but for the grace of God, go I type mentality. Because I've been pulled over by cops, and you get that feeling like, oh, fuck, this could be it. And, you know, shit, you know.
Yeah.
And I talk about it. I joke about it on stage and stuff, too. But like it, because white people are galvanized, that makes me cautiously optimistic, because white people are trying, because black people, we cannot solve this. This is an issue for white people to figure out, because we can't fix it. Right. So because I see white people being more galvanized, talking about it without being prompted, just because it's something that's going on. Like I listen to people like you on podcasts when there's no black people around, the stuff that you've said on your show and stuff like that. And I think I heard you say one time, like, if you're X, then you can fuck off. You know, like if you're against what I'm saying right now, then fuck you. I think you might have said that one or two times, I've heard. You know, like if you're against what these people are protesting for, I don't want to put the words in your mouth, but
no. It's one of those things where, you know, I try to be as logical as always, and try to be as logical as you know, as I think people all should, everybody should be, where I say things like, look, if you're white, you don't know what it's like to be black and go to a place and be looked at differently. You just don't. You just fucking don't. And I know that there is a lot of fucked up shit and feelings. And I'm sure, Chris, if I sat down with you over a beer and I said, hey, man, what's some racist shit that happened to you? We'd probably sit there for a while. And you'd be like, well, you know, when I was in fourth grade, this happened. When I went to my friend's house and, you know, there's somebody came in the room, I felt this way. Or I, like you said, I got pulled over. And I understand that. And when you say to somebody, man, you don't know what it's like to feel that. So until you do, but then I also do the other thing. And I do the other thing, Chris, not because I'm white. I do the other thing because I'm trying to be, like I said, logical, where I go. But there, the other side is, because when I said something like that, of course I support Black Lives Matter. But how could I not, you know, how could I not? You know, but then what happened was, if I said something like, yo, man, abolishing the police is crazy, like no police, then all of a sudden it's like people were making it like it's like, no, it's one side.
And you're the patriarchy and you just want to protect your property. I mean, that's what, like, the police was created for people's property to be protected and to police
Chris,
that.
Put it this way, man. Wherever you are in Jersey, I don't want to say, I never like saying the person I'm talking to, I never like saying what town anybody's in, but let's say where you are in the state of New Jersey or whatever. And tonight, you know, you saw a car pull up and you saw kind of people getting out acting sketchy. I mean, to just be like, oh, abolish all police and not have anybody, you know, it'd be hilarious if you're like, yo, can you send black cops?
But, well, even like, though those can be worse at times. I mean, have you've seen was it Boys in the Hood? God, I'm gonna lose my black card. It's either Boys in the Hood. No, it's Menace to Society. Anyway,
it's hard to take that seriously after seeing Menace. I mean, Boys. I mean, what is it called? Don't Be a Menace.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean,
yo, it's hard to see some of those serious movies after seeing the Wayans Brother movie. But like, yeah, no, it's like it's like you said, yeah, people just are drawing a line where it's like, if you say you believe, you know, Black Lives Matter, then you are against police and you think that. So I have dear friends that are cops, and it's like, so, but I do know that when you say something to somebody like that, no, fuck yeah, you could, you know, and it's like, no, man, like, I don't know what it's like to be pulled over. I don't know what it's like to be pulled over because, you know, of what I look like and assuming that I'm doing something wrong. And anybody that says they are is full of shit, you know. And but I also would never go up to a cop that did nothing wrong and say, you piece of shit pig, you should die, you know.
Oh, so, and neither would I.
And of course you wouldn't, because you're a logical person who just wants fairness and people to be treated the right way. And I'll tell you what, man, if the majority of the people were thinking like us, then we wouldn't be seeing this shit. But this this is wild times. And yeah. Well, I'm glad you're all right. I'm glad you didn't get COVID, and I'm glad you're out of the city. Yeah. So you know,
I'm trying to find I feel you, man. I'm trying to find the quote. Okay, I'm going to find this quote from a guy I went to high school with. I'm not going to say his name, but he is a cop. He is black. He says, post from a black man in uniform. It ain't easy for us, Slim. We doing it because we fear what would occupy our position if we quit. We ain't getting rich doing this shit. We stay because we've been harassed off duty, and that shit's foul. I think it's like more like I understand where he's coming from. I think what I want to do is rewatch Wyatt Cenac's Problem Areas. He did a whole season on police reform, and I think it's more to it than just abolishing the police. I think one of the solutions is to have, like, you have these cops that don't live in the areas that they police. And so they don't give a fuck about what they do. And there's some, you know, that don't give a fuck about what they do in certain towns and shit like that. I myself want to become more educated in that. I know that's one of the solutions. Like, if I was a cop and I'm a police in the area where I live, then I would have more invested in my job and the people that I am looking after. Because you're supposed to be protecting and serving the community. Yes. So I think and I think that's where, because it's easy to just go, you're either with us or against us on the abolish the police. But like, you look at something like the institution is inherently fucked up. Like, the DNA is really fucked up within that institution, like a lot of them are in America. And that's why we've seen 2020 make a lot of this shit that we hold to such high esteem fragile. You see how quick, how quick the everything just like plummeted when people were out of work, and people still out of work. But the police stuff, I would recommend that the listeners, like, you guys check it out. Guys and gals, they and them, everybody. Check out what Wyatt Cenac was doing on HBO, because like, they canceled that shit. He was doing some good shit. It seems like, and it's not. I'm talking about a lot of shit, but he has some good shit in that show. And it seems like a lot of these shows, I guess it's just not a market for it or what. Like, I know Hasan Minhaj's show got canceled.
I think some shit went down with that, though.
Okay, we can talk about that off mic.
Yeah, I think some shit, but no, I know what you're saying. I think, too, it's like, I think what happens is, like, I think a lot of times when late night talk show hosts do it, and mm-hmm. then I think you have the Daily Show, and I think after a while, I think it might be hard for people to kind of go, oh, here's a new one like that.
Yeah.
You know, maybe, but like, that seems like a better idea to me than put police officers that live in the neighborhood to do that. That seems like a better idea than to abolish or take away their resources. That's
oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, I mean, I think it's not so cut and dry. And I think that's what people like tend to, because that
could... I actually think that seems to me more of a very proactive, clever, like, I'll tell you what, it's like, no, man, my friend lives down there. You know?
Yeah.
You know, yeah, that's definitely different than like, oh, take all that money or, you know, abolish the police and like people see what's going on in New York. And I'll tell you, everybody, all cultures don't want that. No, right. Nobody wants to just feel scared. That's like, it seems to me the people, and I could be wrong. It seems to me the people saying abolish the police and take all the police's resources, even the good ones. It seems to me it might be some of those sleeper cell type people.
It's a little bit of like it's just like the whole, like, we're comics, so it's like I think we're both, most artists are sensitive, and I think that we have like empathy for people. We're trying to make people laugh. Most of us try, most comics, the good ones, or fuck it, I don't know, I only speak for myself, but I feel like I try to take the pain that I've experienced, the stuff that's bad that's happened to me, the stuff that's funny that's happened to me, the ups and downs, I try to put that together and try to give people a good time. And I try to like take all that and spit it out in a way that's palatable for a general audience. I don't care who's in the audience, what your sexuality is, what your race is. I'm trying to make you laugh and have a good human experience. And because of that, I care about what the fuck is going on in the world. And I, you know, it's all that shit. It's empathy. It's like, it always goes back to empathy. And I think that's what's lacking. That's why I take the politicization out of it and just say like, man, I want to wear a mask. I'm wearing a mask because I don't want to get you sick. I don't want to get this guy sick. I don't want to get that guy sick. And that's why I'm wearing a mask, because I'm an American. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, if we really like believe in the ideals that we say we do collectively, and all these documents that were, you know, that's what Black people are fighting for, to be looked at as equal. It's not trying to, Black lives matter because they matter just like yours does and your parents. It's not Black lives matter because we're better. Black lives matter because we want to be looked at as equal, and we want to have the same unalienable rights that you guys have. And I don't want you to think that this is like me, I'm talking at you, Paul, but we're friends. We know
saying, now that we're talking about this, I remember something, and I want to tell you on your podcast.
Tell me on my podcast.
It just hit me as we were talking about this. You and I, we've gotten into a couple of arguments about sports, right? LeBron James was a big one.
Yes.
You like to root for the Black quarterback and all that stuff and everything. And not that we were arguing it, but
yeah.
you were doing something during a time where we weren't talking a lot that was bothering me. And I, not in a way where it would ever affect us, but I remember now that we're talking, I would go, man, Chris is going, have not bothered me like fuck that guy. Mm-hmm. But like you, there was a time where it was like, you were doing like hashtag Black quarter. I was probably just bitter because of the LeBron James fight, but you were just going like, no, you were going like hashtag Black quarterback, hashtag Black actors, hashtag, and you were doing it a lot. And I remember after, like, I saw it a bunch of times, I'm going like, is it like, I was thinking to myself, and again, I don't want to say annoyed where I'm like, fuck Chris, because I mean, I would never, I mean, I wouldn't be on, we wouldn't be friends. That's not what I'm saying. But you were doing, and then I actually thought to myself, and this is just me being honest. And again, not annoyed, but I'm going to be like, man, Chris is going hard with this, like, black quarterback, this and that. And you know, he doesn't care what team, and then this and that, and black actors. And then I said to myself, you know what? I get it. Because if I was a black, and that's one of those moments where I had to, where you have to actually, and it's hard to do for people, but when you actually take yourself back and take yourself out of it, and you go, you know what? If I'm a black dude right now, and here's, and I'll leave it on this, man, and I hope, I don't want to get too race heavy, but
you can do what, Paul, you can do whatever you want podcast.
I think that this is a really good conversation. I think that what I'm about to say, a lot of people should do. And I think it's a smart way to evolve yourself and always put yourself in somebody's situation, right? If you're fighting with your girl or your mother or your father, and they're saying, I feel this way, try to actually feel their position when you do it. And when you do, it makes every fight and everything a better understanding. But I'm the type of person that I'm a fucking competitive. I have the one bad quality about me is I have that vengeance. I have that. If you hurt me from a scale of 1 to 10 on a 3, I want to crush your family on a 27. That's my Sicilian shit. That's something that I need to work on. So if my father tells me something, this person was bad to your grandmother, and I never spoke to them again because he made fun of your grandmother. And then one day he pushed your grandmother down and we don't talk to them anymore. And that whole family hates us and we hate them. I'd be pissed at that family, right? So I look at it like this. Did I lose you or no?
No, I'm still here. I'm listening.
Now, if I'm a black dude and my grandfather says to me, hey, man, this happened to your grandmother and she was walking down this road and she was beaten and robbed for the simple fact that she was a black woman. And that's why you don't have a grandmother anymore, because these racist people did that. Now, knowing how I am as a Sicilian Greek kid and how angry I get if I sit there. Now, if I'm a black man and I heard that that happened to my grandmother and I heard that it was a group that was not my race, whatever it was, whether it was white or Chinese or Spanish or whatever, and that's who did that, then I would always think of that and I would hold that too. So I understand when people of a certain race or culture feel that way. And then you go, well, let me take a step back. Now, I do think on the flip side, I think that some people, you know, I would never say you and I don't think you, but some people, you know, I see in comedy play it a lot, you know, like almost like ride it. And you know, but I never like saw that with you. And I don't mean like an excuse. I mean, just like, you know, there are some comedians, like if you notice like Damon Lemon and certain comedians, they just tell jokes. And you're kind of the same way too. You have some funny, your race jokes are really funny. And I think they're funny and stuff. And I never seen you like, I mean, you'll tell a whole story and do an act out of your, you know, I was thinking about that thing where you were like, I am like my dad or I'm not, like he's sitting right there.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, like stuff like that. Like I just love, but like I guess what I'm trying to say is I try to see every side of everything, and I totally understand. So when you were saying like, man, Paul, I just root for the black quarterback, or like I want LeBron James to succeed because he's a figure under the spotlight in the NBA the way Michael Jordan is, and if he does good and people get off his back, it looks good for, you know, for our race or whatever it is, or for you know how the media is going to portray. You know, a guy like LeBron James out there who's been scrutinized and all that stuff, but he's a black guy, so I get it, or a quarterback. So me being able to do that made me kind of understand, you know, I was like, does Chris hate me? No, but like,
what is that? That's hilarious. Well, no, I get it. I mean, I note that I was doing the hashtag black quarterbacks and black actors before fucking Patrick Mahomes was in the league, before it was cool to root for him. It was way before, and it was way before, and now fuck, the fucking undefeated is on ESPN. Like they're like, oh, black year of the black quarterback. Fuck you guys. I don't give a fuck. But I will say, you know, it is, if you've been marginalized in every field that you've been in, I will root for those guys. I will continue to root for those guys. Yes. Is it the end of the world if they lose? No, because they've technically they've already won. They've used what they've been, their God-given ability. They've cultivated it in order to earn an exorbitant living for themselves and their family. So, you know, that's great too. And but it's not to, because I grew up with, the 7 or 8 years old, Doug Williams went in the Super Bowl in 88. That was a bit, I didn't know, like, he's the first black quarterback to, I was like, why is he the first? Why is he one of the only ones in the league?
Yeah.
And to see the shit that these guys have to go through just to play, you know, oh, this guy should be a wide receiver. There's years, you know, you're a New Yorker. And before I even set foot in New York, I was a kid, and Charlie Ward, a Heisman Trophy winner, was probably one of the best quarterback in New York, and he was playing for your Knicks.
So I remember.
So it's things like that. That's why I do that. But it's not to just.
No, I get it.
Yeah. I'm just saying for the listeners and for every, you know, yeah, for you. And it's not to marginalize. It's not to say, well, fuck Tom Brady. Tom Brady's one of the greatest quarterbacks to ever play the game.
No, yeah, I get it.
You know, but I'm gonna root for Russell Wilson.
Right.
I like those guys. That keeps me interested in a sport that doesn't give a fuck about people of color unless they're playing on the team, and then let alone they don't give a shit, really don't give a shit about any of them, the way that they treat their pensions and things like that when guys get sick and then they blow their brains out and say, oh, they shoot themselves in the chest so they can examine, you can examine their head, you know, the junior say how, you know, and examine their brains and shit. So yeah, man, but it's not to. If you
and even when I say, like, oh man, I got it, not annoyed, but is that, like,
you got mad at me and didn't want to talk to me because I had to Twitter. You know, you could have called me.
No. I never got mad where I didn't want to talk to you. I never got mad where we weren't going to be friends, nothing like that. I was just saying, at one point I was like, you know, I was like, when you were doing it a lot, I was going, all right, man. Like, and then I wanted to be like, and then all of a sudden, I literally one day, I just go, oh, I go, I get it. It's not about not wanting white people to do good. It's about, you know, and like I said, this is a very, like, this what I didn't dwell on this. It was just something where I would be going through my phone and I would see, oh, Lambert tweeted, or what do you say? And I'd be like, all right, man, I get it, man. This guy likes black quarterback. But I wasn't.
And it was probably on a Sunday too.
Yeah, probably on a Sunday. Eli probably threw a pick. You know, and Eli threw a couple of picks, and all of a sudden, but no. And then I just realized, I go, yeah, man, this is what, you know, it's a different thing that I don't understand. And then now I do.
Yeah.
And it was actually really cool to understand that. And it's actually cool to have open dialogue and talk about it.
Yeah. I think that's the point. I mean, you and I think we've talked about a lot of stuff as friends. Like, I've at least known you since 2012.
Yeah, man, I know stuff about your family. You met my house. You know my wife. You know my kids.
Yeah.
You were very gracious, and something that we'll never forget is when my brother-in-law passed away, you showed up to his services, which our whole family still talks about how amazing that was that you did that. No, man, we know each other. You, me, and my older brother have gone out, and my family, yeah, my stepfather and mother and brother, you know, everybody loves you and thinks, you know, so it's really cool like that, man. And me and you could, you know, always joke around but like, you know, when it comes down to this stuff that's heavy, which, you know, listen, man, when somebody's white and somebody's black, they come from different worlds, they come from different things. And you know, talking about things, yeah, like that, or that's why I said to you before we got off the podcast, hey, man, how do you feel? Like, I obviously have an idea of you know, some of the things you're feeling, but like, talk to me, you know what I mean?
And I think it's a good thing. Yeah. And you weren't and when all this stuff was going down, you weren't like, Chris, are you okay? As my black friend, you know what I mean? Like you were just like, we would just check in with each other and life. And you're people in show business, you're busy, whatever level, you have a family and stuff like that. I have a PlayStation 4 Pro. It's like you're so into your own shit that sometimes you look up and you're like, oh, how's this guy doing? How's that guy? You know, like all that stuff.
And you're
to blame for me having this podcast because you showed me how easy it was to do. So,
it's funny that you say that because, I helped you with the.
Yeah, it was you. I would say the three biggest people to blame are you, Christian Polanco, and Andy Klein.
Yeah, two great guys too. Andy Klein's hilarious. And that was one of the.
Yeah.
That was such a great weekend. That was like the first weekend where I started to get the new hour in at least the direction I wanted, and you and Andy were on the show, and I would do that weekend with you guys. You know, any day.
But oh no, yeah, that man, was fun.
And I would never like I would never call you up because of something on the news and go, "Hey, Chris, as my black friend, are you okay?" And it's like that to me. You know, that to me is just some fake bullshit. And it's not. You know, that's almost to me like the opposite of a real friendship. It's like,
yeah.
You know, like I don't need to do that. You know that I'm. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and there have been other. And Paul has more black friends than me. I've been at the house where there have been other black people at your house.
Yeah. Yes. That's hilarious.
And I told them to leave. I said there can't be more than one. I have to be the only one. I didn't say that.
I invited some, man. I invited a bunch of friends to come up. Damian Lemon didn't come up. I invited a couple people, but you know it's funny oh shit, what was I just gonna say? You were saying you got it. When we get off the phone, you got to tell me the white people that hit you up to ask if you were okay. that'll be a secret little podcast.
Oh, but, shit.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, man. I mean, I think it's just like it's dialogue. And I think, you know, a lot of times there's comics that have a common ground on a lot of things. And despite like our differences or how we grew up, I think the fact that we do what we do is one of the things that bring each other together. I think it's about all of that. And it's not for us to solve, but maybe, you know, we can just be an example by just trying to be better people. I mean, I think that's something I always have to recalibrate every day that I wake up, you know, trying to like self-improvement, try to be nicer to people and
all that it's shit. It's so weird to me. It's so weird to me that like it's 2020 and we just have this thing where it's like people still just don't treat people the way they want to be treated. And it's just to me, it's just a, you know, like it's just such a weird, it's just a weird thing. But, you know, like I said before, hopefully with all these horrible things that have happened in the year 2020, let's just hope maybe, man, moving forward, this is like a cleansing and people can learn from it and get better. You know what I mean? That's really all you can hope for.
Yeah, man. Well, Paul, plug everything that you're doing. This will go up in a couple of days. So just plug any dates that people who want to risk their lives to go see you tell jokes.
This weekend I'll be in Connecticut, man. Friday night I'm going to be at the farm at Carter Hill at 7:00. I will be performing there. That is in Marlborough, Connecticut. It's outside. It's awesome. Tickets are being sold. Then the next night I'm also outside at the Priam Winery Vineyard, doing an outside show at 7:00 there. Next weekend I will be kicking off the Fairfield Comedy Festival at the Fairfield Comedy Club at the Circle Hotel, which is one of my favorite rooms. This time it's outside in the back. I heard it's amazing, actually. I heard Mike Birbiglia and John Mulaney just went there and loved it. I'm going to be there kicking off the festival. There's going to be cigars afterwards. That is the 4th and 5th. Then the weekend after that, Cleveland, Ohio. I will be at Hilarities the 10th through 12th. And then the weekend after that, the Atlanta Punchline. You could see all of those dates on paulverzi.com. I got a new web series out called Dude, I Called It, where my guest gives predictions. And, of course, the Verzi Effect podcast. You could get it all on my new YouTube channel, Paul Verzi. That's V-I-R-Z-I. Check out my socials, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. Chris, you are the best, man. I really I appreciate it, and I miss you, dude.
I miss you too, man. I missed shooting the shit. We'll end it. We'll end it here. We'll hold on to the line. But yeah, Paul, I miss you too, buddy. Always a pleasure to chat with you. You had me. I was talking to my parents a couple of days ago, and we were just talking about laughing. And I said, I at least need one good laugh a day. And when you called me to confirm about doing this today. You called me at work and gave me shit for using a work voice.
There's nothing funnier than when you call somebody and you're excited to talk and then they just go, hello. Oh, it's so funny, man.
And it's just, even that's still just like a public, that's just like a being in public thing. Cause I don't like talking on the phone in public, but people are so fucking nosy. They're nosy. And then, yeah. And then it's like, then it's not that many people, so you know they're fucking listening. So, yeah, so that was funny. I was like, and you were just giving me, I couldn't do anything. You were giving me shit on the other end. I couldn't do anything but laugh.
So. I know, I loved it. And then when I had you going, I was like, oh, he's going. So let me just go. But we always had silly, funny laughs, like, you know, the time with the dolphins in the movie theater. And like,
yeah.
we always joke and have a good time, man. So
always
I miss that
inside baseball. Yeah. Yes. So everybody, thank you so much for listening. Paul, thanks for doing it. Stay on the line and we'll talk to you next time. Everybody, take it easy.